morning, party people, and welcome to Cancun, Mexico. Out here on the beach, flew down for a long weekend to get away because it's because I could, I guess. A bunch of friends of ours went down. We didn't really have a good excuse, and we're like, they said, we're going to Cancun. We said, okay, sure. Yeah, why not? What the heck? So let's go through your top voted questions. I should also mention this is, if you're watching this on YouTube, it's a 360 video. So you should be able to grab hold of the video and move it around and look and see the beach around me at a beachfront resort here. That's just lovely. So let's take a look at your top voted questions from Poll Gab. The top voted question comes from Agony, who asks, Agony asks, I've taken all of the standard advice. I've read every page of documentation. I've built myself a lab. I bought a monitoring tool, but I still suck at debugging AG outages. Where do I go for learning more? I need a guru. Okay, so there are two ways you could think about this. If you want to learn something like troubleshooting, then you have to be faced with broken instances of that tool. You have to be faced with outages that you don't know the source of, that you don't know the root cause of, and then you need to fix those. Well, that's really hard when you're doing it yourself. That's not really a self-paced activity that you can go through. The way that you get good at something like that is you have to be faced with those issues, which means you have to do it in real life. If you truly want to do that, you want to work at an organization that supports a lot of availability groups. You want to work either for a consulting or contracting company that fixes those problems, or a giant company that has a lot of availability groups in it, or Microsoft support. Microsoft support actually hires people and trains them, and then you get on-the-job experience working with things like that. But what I would say to you is, if you're not doing one of those jobs already, what is your real goal for trying to get really good at such a complex issue? That's a tough question to answer. If you don't have that many availability groups and you're not faced with that many outages, it's cool that you want to learn it, but I would question why you want to learn that. But if you do want to learn it, I just gave you the keys to go do that kind of thing. Next up here, let's see. Blake DBE says, in a transactional database, we have a standard to create indexes for all foreign keys. In the DBA's quarterly request to drop unused indexes, sometimes they want to ask to drop those foreign key indexes. What that tells you is that the indexes aren't being used for joins. You said you want to index them in order to support joins, but that tells you that the application isn't actually doing those joins or isn't doing them in a way that that index is particularly useful. So they may have other indexes that are wider, that encompass more than just the key, like they start with the key and then they have other columns. Or it might be time to say, do we really need those foreign keys? They might be doing you more harm than good. And if people were like, well, they stop bad data from getting into the database, it's time to start asking how mature the application is. Maybe there just aren't bugs that would put in bad data right now. So do you really want to firewall off to make sure there's no bad data when you aren't putting in any bad data? That's a discussion that only you can answer. I mean, I could answer it, but you don't really need my answer for that if it's just random. Oh, interesting. CX Phoenix asks, did Query Store really fix anything in practice, or did it just give us one more DMV to ignore? When Query Store first came out, it caused way more problems than it fixed. It caused all kinds of problems. And it took, there's like a four-wheeler or something. Oh, a tractor. Okay. It took years. Wait for that to go by. It took years for it to become stable enough that it was really useful. And then it took several years beyond that for Microsoft to continue iterating on it, to ship improvements that were features, and to build other features that relied on query store, like persisted memory grant feedback. So what I would say is, it didn't solve problems in the beginning, but these days it solves all kinds of problems. You don't see a lot of people doing training on it or building blog posts on it, because the one person who was really active in that, Erin Stellato, used to be a consultant at SQL Skills. She's now gone to Microsoft. I just haven't seen anybody else pick up that torch. It's a great example of how, if you want to become internet famous as a blogger or trainer, consultant, whatever, there are still lots of features out there in SQL Server and Azure SQL DB, managed instances, hyperscale, that you can become internet famous on those features. Query Store is a great example where it's all greenfield, and you could go start publishing your own work on that and do the community a lot of good. Next up, My Tea Got Cold says, I've run out of good jokes for what DBA stands for. Please give me some. You know, it's funny that, so this is a great example of what ChatGPT is so good at. Things like ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, etc. are so good at that because they give you new ones that aren't commonly out in the industry. Go give that a shot. It's really useful. Oh, next up, Zlob NY Far says, very important. Thank you, Brent, for keeping DBA's lives a little bit easier. You're welcome. That's very sweet of you. Although that wasn't the top voted question. So, Next up, Auto Optimizer says, you talk a lot about why people shouldn't store XML and JSON in the database. So why do developers love doing it if it makes queries slower and indexes useless? The reason why they do it, so there are two. One is that they are told that it's fine, that Microsoft documentation and people without any experience will, or people with experience at very small scale, will say, here, check out this feature, here's how it works, and people assume that because it's built into the product, it must be a good thing. But I would encourage people to think about your own software products. Think about the products that you build. Have you ever shipped a feature just to check something off a box and move on and say, yeah, we have that? But then privately with customers, you might say, well, you don't really want to use that. It's not really our flagship feature. The other reason people use it is that they just don't need much of it. If you only need to throw a couple of JSON columns in there and you're not querying them, you're just like stuffing product attributes to be rendered on a web page. Sure, if you're not really needing to query them, then it's fine. Next up, Cycle to Work asks, why does SQL Server need to do a compute scalar operation when returning a persisted computed column from a table? I have no idea for that one. I would need to see the query plan and the tables and all that. That's a good, because I don't see that, in at least as far as I remember. You might be facing a unique bug on a particular version. It might be something with your query, the way that you've written the scalar function, could be any number of things. But unfortunately, it's beyond the scope of what I can answer quickly here. Next up, Cloudy with a Chance of DTU asks, was the DTU model the worst thing Microsoft has ever done to SQL Server, or am I missing something? So for those of you who haven't heard of it, because a lot of you probably haven't heard of the DTU model, when Microsoft brought out Azure SQL DB, they wanted to come up with a way to charge people for how much their queries were using, you know, how much horsepower their queries were using. So they came up with this thing called database throughput units, and it was supposed to abstract a bunch of different things, like perhaps it included the cost of CPU and memory and I/O. You got DTU amounts for each of those. I think it was a noble idea, but I don't think that there's a way to really do it accurately without pissing some people off. People are going to say, oh, that cost isn't right, and this cost isn't right. And at the time, Microsoft didn't document it very well. They didn't explain what a DTU was. They just kept it vague and hand-wavy. And I understand why they did that. It's because I think the DTU measure was still evolving in the beginning, and they had to kind of hone it to get it right. Was it the worst thing that they ever did? No, if I had to say the worst thing Microsoft ever did to SQL Server, boy, that's a tough one. Because I don't think they've really, screwed it. I think the worst thing they've ever done, I don't know. You know, I have a blog post about the 10 worst things that SQL Server or Microsoft ever did to SQL Server, but I don't remember what the big answer was offhand. And it's really funny. It must be because of my vacation, but I'm so laid back and peaceful at this vacation that I'm like, well, was anything ever really bad in the grand scheme of things? Isn't everything just kind of cool? But that's why you go on vacation, so that you have those frame of mind changes. Let's see, next up, John Stake. Hold on a second here. I got my pull gab disconnected, so I got to reconnect it in. I have kind of a sketchy Wi-Fi connection out here in the middle of nowhere, so let's go back in and refocus that, get that in. Okay, John Stake asks, our company is migrating from SQL Server to Postgres to cut costs. I'm concerned about performance degradation. What are the key performance differences to anticipate, especially with execution plans and query optimization? The thing that I would just start with is you're probably used to having a list of queries that you tune. You're like, these are the worst queries on the server, and these are the ones that cause me the most problems. When you switch to a different database backend, A, you're changing some of the queries, and B, you're changing the database engine. So just walk in fresh going, the things that I know from yesterday may not be the problems that I'm facing today. It will be a completely different set of queries that you're facing, a completely different set of bottlenecks. You're going to solve for them differently because, after all, when you don't have to pay for CPU cores for licensing and when there's no 128 gig bullshit cap on the memory for standard edition, looking at you, Microsoft, then why would you not throw a lot more hardware on it? I like to remind clients, in this day and age, my laptop has more cores than standard edition can access. My laptop maxes out standard edition in terms of memory. That's just a laptop. So you really reset what hardware is normal when you switch those platforms. Next up here, let's see. Auto Optimizer asks, my Wi-Fi flaked out again here. Give me just a second to refresh this page. Go back to Otto's question. Otto says, do query hints make you a bad DBA? And I would add to that developer. Or are they just practical tools that Microsoft secretly expects us to use? I would say, imagine that you're a home owner and you're working on things at home, like fixing a leaky faucet, or I say that because I had to fix a leaky faucet recently, or trying to make a door close more evenly. There are tools that you start with, a screwdriver, a hammer, maybe a saw. And then the more experience that you have, the more you may find you need specialized tools, a power saw, a band saw. I mean, there are all kinds of things. A power screwdriver would be a good introductory next step up tool. So there are more and more advanced tools. It's just that you shouldn't start with those tools, because most of the problems that you need to solve, you can solve with a screwdriver and a hammer and maybe a pair of needle nose pliers. That's all the tools that I have at home. And I still managed to fix. I also had an adjustable wrench. So that was how I got to fix my leaky faucet. Next up, I write SQL in Portuguese says, you mentioned some time ago that you would be doing a mastering column store class. Any plans on this, or you scraped the idea? When you're a small, I'm 6'3", but when you're a small consultant and trainer, you got to pick your battles. You got to pick the stuff that you believe people will pay you money for. And what I found is that there were almost no takers for fundamentals of column store. people would watch it if they bought a bundle. If they bought a bundle of all my classes, they would watch Fundamentals of Column Store. But nobody is buying Fundamentals of Column Store. Column Store, for some reason, just doesn't get the press that's necessary. And I think that a lot of people just think that they're going to go slap it on, and then they get horribly burned as they try to do it with terabyte-sized tables. So I know there's an audience, but the audience is just so small. I mean, I'd sell maybe 50 of them tops, and it wouldn't pay for the amount of time that I would have to spend actually honing the class, getting the material right, building the demos, rehearsing them all. It would lose me money, so I'm not going to bother doing it. Next up, let's see here. Licensing Larry says, given SQL Server's licensing costs, why would anyone choose Enterprise Edition instead of just building around Standard Edition's limitations? Oh, that's a really interesting question. Why would anyone choose Enterprise Edition? Okay. So assume that you're a big shop, an enterprise, if you will, and you run a lot of SQL servers. One of the most efficient ways to do that is with virtualization. You have one VMware or Hyper-V or whatever host, and then you pile on lots of guests onto that host. When you do that, you have to license with Enterprise Edition at the host level for it to really make financial sense, and then you get to run a buttload of guests. At that point, as long as you're doing that, and every enterprise is doing it because every enterprise runs VMs these days, as long as you're doing that, why would you not rely on things that Enterprise Edition has built into the box? That changes for small companies and customers who use the cloud because it's much harder to use Enterprise's VM license. Not impossible, but you have to use dedicated hosts, which is kind of a pain in the rear end. So it's less popular these days up in the cloud. It's much more common to use Standard Edition, especially given how expensive virtual hardware is in the cloud. The other reason that people go to enterprise is because they have truly big data. They have single tables that are over a terabyte in terms of size. And to handle that, they really want big hardware. And the 24 core limits and 128 gig RAM limits in SQL Server, as far as we know, it's in 2022. There's no reason to expect that will be different in 2025. I don't expect Microsoft to improve those limitations because their logic, I'm sure, is going to say something like, well, most VMs are really small. You know, up in the cloud, VMs are really tiny, so you don't need Enterprise Edition unless you're really, really big. So I also don't hear a lot of pushback from people that 128 gigs isn't enough, because I think, and same thing with 24 CPU cores, I think that CTOs, executives, are still of the mindset, especially ones who rely on Microsoft software, are still of the mindset that 128 gigs is a lot of RAM, whereas you go into the open source world, and that is absolutely not the case. I mean, it's not unusual to see a $10,000 or $20,000 server with half a terabyte worth of RAM in it. It's just not that much in comparison. All right, well, that's a pile of questions, and I realized just a minute ago that I didn't put any sunscreen on, so I need to get my pasty rear end back inside and go put some sunscreen on before I come out here and settle down in one of those cabanas that you see over there. There's like 10 or 12 of us, so we've got, I think there's 15, actually. So we've got a cabana that we're renting. Here comes that tractor again. A cabana that we're renting. So I tend to hang out in there and just enjoy the shade and the drinks. Plus, too, it's unlimited booze here. It's an all-inclusive resort, so who doesn't love that? So I am out of here, and I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios. Where's the stop button?